Yeah, I got him.
Good morning.
What the heck was that? Was
I
that
think you called the wrong
Coming to
person, Mike.
America?
Sorry. I had to clear my throat.
The hell was that?
Probably because you just destroyed it.
Yeah.
So Ichabod Crane is joining us this time as a special
Hey, he
guest.
did. You did kind of sound like the Donald D Uncle Scrooge version of Ichabod Crane.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
don't think I could beat that
no,
if I
or the
tried.
I'm thinking of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, you did kind of sound like him. When you know it's when it's Uncle Scrooge McDuck.
Well, good morning. No, see, I can't do it anymore. It's
Yeah,
gone.
it was gone.
Yep.
So if we ever hire you for animation, we know not to do it.
No, I can never
You can
repeat.
never
Yep.
repeat.
Nope.
So
How was
Chris is
everyone this morning?
good. Chris is recording in case I have to leave.
Chris, is this true?
Yeah.
Yep. How wonderful.
Which there's a high probability.
No, there's not. Everything is fine. Everything's going fine. There's no reason why they would need you on a Sunday.
There's probably going to be a shit storm.
I'm
You
sorry to hear
hope
that.
for the best, but plan for the worst. That's
Yeah.
my motto.
So they gotta call you in with your shit vacuum.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I can just pile more shit onto the fire.
Oh. Well, you saw a new movie yesterday, Mike, or was it no, sa yeah, yesterday or Saturday or Friday?
I saw two movies. I went to see Joker again because I had Friday off, sort of. I had to be
Right.
here for contractors because we're getting estimates on a couple things. And as soon as they left, I went to go see Joker again. I just love that film, man. I haven't been obsessed with the film in such a long time, but holy mackerel.
Yeah, you've been
He
enjoying that. How many times is that? Three?
No, it's a second.
Oh, I thought it was three. Okay.
Yeah. And then I saw The Terminator.
Oh, how was that?
That was really good. I went in with low expectations, and it was really good.
Oh, good. And as you know, another non-retro movie, Chris, you gotta rent Midsommar. Oh my gosh, is that a creepy movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard
Yeah, you probably heard Bill Bomer say it's 5 out of 10.
Is that what he really said?
Yeah, 5 out of 10.
That is not a good score.
Well, that's what you do to all my movies, so I feel pretty good about it.
Wow.
No,
You might not want to believe that until you hear it from,
nah, he
yeah,
liked it. He
Bill's
liked it.
mouth. It was great. But
But
anyhow,
I watched
that's
an
not
old
retro.
movie. I watched an old retro movie.
You
Not
did.
a
New retro movie?
new retro movie. Well, it's new to me. I just like
Yeah.
randomly go on to TMC, which is a wonderful station, and just pick stuff.
Was it
I've
Treasure of the Sierra Madre?
No, it
Oh,
was
that's a good one.
there's a lot of good ones. Like there's
Yeah.
stuff every day that I want to watch, and I
Was it
like.
Funny Girl?
No, but I almost watched it this morning. It was on at 4 a.m. That's funny that you mention it, because I hear good things about Funny Girl.
Was it let's just I mean there's only a
Yeah,
few old movies, so let's
right,
just
right, right.
guess.
Let's keep going.
Actually, I
No.
think I actually think I saw you post what it was, so
Was it
I...
Casablanca? No, but that's on my list.
Oh my God, that movie's amazing.
It's on my list.
Yeah, it's very good.
This was from 1945,
Okay, 45.
during the war. Wow.
What was going on in 45?
The portrait, well, it's the picture of Dorian Gray.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't know much
I've never
about this
seen that.
guy other than I watched League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and I liked him in it and I thought it was fascinating. So I'm like, where did Alan Moore get this guy from? And I wasn't going to go read the Oscar Wilde book or poem, to be honest with you. So,
Well, we all know that. I mean, if you tried to, you'd be like 67 before you finished it, so.
that's true. I think there's only two books that I've ever read outside of having to.
What were they?
Misery by Stephen King. I read that when it came out.
How long did that take you? A few years?
No, it took me a week or two. I read that one pretty quick. That was
I thought you
that.
were a
It's not a.
20-page person every other month.
No, I read that pretty quickly.
Okay.
And then I
It
read
was things
Necromon.
were different then.
What was it called? Necromonicon or.
The Necronomicon.
Yeah, the Brian Lumley.
I
He
don't know
did
that one.
a comic book for Malibu, and it was so awesome that I had to go get the novel and read it.
How's Joyland so far?
It's really good. And then the thing is that's awesome about it, which surprises the hell out of me, is I don't forget. Isn't that
Yeah, that is
amazing?
good. Well, you know what? That
With
shows you that it's good.
all the shit that I read, every time I go back and read it, I know where I left off.
Now that book can't be 200 pages long.
Did you read it? Yeah, well, I'm at the part where it was a really hot day and he was in the costume and he saves that little girl's life. He was dancing around, and then he got like publicity for it. So that's kind of like where I'm at. And she was like the warning sign because there's that future fortune teller woman that works there, and she sort of told him to stay away, like this was some kind of bad omen, and it's sort of like coming true. So yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen after that. But the character's really likable. It's a story about a guy that was in love with a girl and she sort of dumps him, and he's stuck at this amusement park for the summer. And I think he even contemplated suicide at some point.
He's working there, right?
Yeah, he's working there.
Okay, I couldn't remember for sure.
And the people that work there love him. So like they're taking care of him. They're trying to make sure he eats and stuff because they know he's like depressed. But when he's in the costume and helping kids, he's like at his highest like point. But yeah, I haven't finished it. So there's two books that I've read. That shows you how well literate I am. And then I'd go read some Oscar Wilde. Isn't he a poet more than a author, or is he both?
I honestly don't know. If you would have just asked me, I would have said poet, but I don't know.
I think more playwright.
Playwright.
Oh, playwright, huh?
Well, he wrote
Oh,
this
poet
thing.
also. I think he wrote like a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. This is a weird film. It's very, very strange because it doesn't really center, in my opinion, it doesn't center around Dorian. It centers around this asshole, pretentious nutbag that I hate. That leads him down this dark path. And like for no reason other than he's just a pompous dick that Dorian looks up to. Let's see what his name is. Lord Henry Wooten. He talks like a womanizer, he acts like an asshole. He's just like 100% asshole. And there's one day that Dorian's well to do. He's getting his painting picture, done. And he's posing. And he gets this painting, and this painting is a big part of the story. And Lord Henry Wooten is telling him, you're going to age and you're going to get old and you got to live life and all this kind of crap that he says he hasn't done. And so he decides, well, yeah, I'm going to live life. And then he goes to the painting and he sort of like sells his soul to the devil, kind of, even though it's not the devil. He just says to the painting, if only the painting can age and I can stay forever young. And that's sort of like when the curse is put on it. Even though when the guy Basil Hallward is painting it. He said, "This is weird. It's like I'm painting a line and the line is changing." Like he's freaking out when he's like painting it. But anyway, that Lord Henry Wotton leaves him to go live life. So he goes to the poor part of town and he meets a woman, Sybil Vane, and sort of falls in love with her instantaneously. She's like in the poor part of town, but she does like singing. And that's played by Angela Lansbury, which I thought was fascinating because I didn't know that when I watched the film, but I'm like, damn, this woman's face looks familiar. And I don't know Angela Lansbury other than she was in Murder, She Wrote, and I never watched it. But 1945, she was pretty young.
Yeah, she would have been young, probably in her 20s, I would guess.
Yeah, she was very pretty, and he fell in love with her. And he's going to ask her to marry him. And this Lord Henry dude does another shyster move, and he does a dick move. He just tells him, if she's going to truly be your wife, you should tell her to spend the night with you before you get married. Like, what kind of shit is this? Like, So he does that. He plants this idea in his head, and then he runs this test, and he says, "Oh, if you stay with me the night, don't go home." And she obviously says, "No, I need to go home." She's with her mother, and she goes home, and he says, "Well," he writes her a letter, and the letter says, "You know, you broke my heart. I don't want anything to do with you." And then she kills herself, and that's when you see the painting change, and the painting just gets uglier and uglier as his soul gets ugly, and it's sort of narrated. It's almost like somebody's reading you the book. It's not him narrating himself. It's like him narrating his thoughts. It's weird. And you have somebody doing voice narration for that. And he keeps the painting. Once he knows the painting's jacked up, he keeps it in this locked room, and he doesn't want anybody to go to it, not even his servants.
Well, sure. He doesn't want it messed with.
There's a key scene at the very beginning of the movie, though. It's like I missed the first 10 minutes, but I caught the most important scene of the movie. And it's there's this little girl, and the artist is painting him. And he knows this little girl very well. This is before he's turned evil. And this little girl ages to become 25, and Dorian Gray doesn't even age. And he ends up killing the father because he shows him the picture again. And he's like, what the hell? You know, the picture turns into a monster. And it looks like a Mr. Hyde. It doesn't even look like a human being. And he sees it and he's like, well, my daughter's fond of you and you're asking her to marry you. So I got to tell her to get the shit out. You're an evil person. And that's when Dorian kills the artist. He puts a knife in his back and then the picture changes again. That's his first murder. So he caused the first woman to commit suicide, he killed his friend, an artist, and then the third death is this guy that he knew in college. He's a scientist, and he like blackmails him to destroy the body of his artist friend because he was murdered in that room that he keeps locked up. And so he blackmails that guy, and that guy feels so bad that he kills himself. So again, Dorian's only killed one person, but his soul is rotting away in the picture because he has to do with two deaths. And then he proposes to the little girl that was watching the painting earlier on because she's in her 20s. And the daughter of the father he killed. And then he decides to not spare her and not marry her. And he writes her a letter and doesn't. And then he goes into the upper room and grabs a knife and is going to put a knife through the picture's heart. And I guess you can guess what happens. He sort of kills himself by putting the knife through his own heart. And then when the girl and that Lord Henry asshole guy come to the house because somebody broke into his house earlier that wanted to marry this girl Gladys, I think is that's her name. And he found the picture and it had the signature was the same and it had the little girl's initial G at the bottom and he described it and he said, "That is the original painting. Why does it look like a monster?" So when they get there, the picture looks all nice and has a knife in the heart. And then Dorian Gray's on the floor and he looks like the hideous monster. So it's even though it's like not a horror movie, it is.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Would you give it a 5 out of 10?
No, I'd probably give it a 4 out of 5.
Four
I
out of
really
five.
liked it, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I
I've never seen it,
probably
but I
wouldn't
have
have
read
picked
the
it.
story.
Well, there you go. You probably know more, and they probably tweak some things, but I'm sure they got the gist of it the same.
Yeah, it sounds like it from what I remember. I think I read it in college. I only remember the basic gist of it, so I wouldn't be able to say if there was subtle differences.
Yeah,
I
well, I only
watched.
highlighted the beginning, and then the Angela Lansbury character. Oh, there's one other death. The Angela Lansbury character had a
Mrs.
brother.
Potts.
She had a brother that was kind of like a sailor, and when he finds out his sister died, he comes back to where Dorian is, and he was going under a different name, and he finds out that it is Dorian, and he goes to. There's a hunting expedition, which it's just odd how this happens. And he brings a pistol with him, and he's going to kill Dorian because he knows that Dorian caused the death of his sister, Angela Lansbury. And he goes there, and some random hunter shoots him, and he dies. But it's still blamed on Dorian that that happened, and his picture got even worse, you know, during that death. So there were four deaths. And he only committed one murder and caused the other two, but you know, suicide. And then the other guy, he knew was after him, but he really had nothing to do with his death. It was just like some weird, random occurrence.
Cool.
Yeah. And he's in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I watched one on Friday. I think I watched one on Friday. It's called I Walked with a Zombie from
Ah,
1943.
nice.
And so back then, zombies were in terms of associated with like voodoo, like.
Yeah, like a Haitian thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be turned into a zombie, meaning you're like mindless and stuff like that. It wasn't like Night of the Living Dead or anything like that. And so basically, the plot of this is this gentleman, I forget the last name, his first name is Paul. He hires a nurse to come care for his wife, who's had like some sort of a mental breakdown, and so he hires the nurse, and they live out in the Caribbean. So they travel there by boat, and it's a beautiful area and everything. And his half brother lives at the estate as well. His name's Wesley, and as well as their mother. And basically, the nurse named Betsy, she goes to care for the woman, and the woman's like almost like kind of like a catatonic state, but she'll just get up and start walking around and stuff, but totally like she'll obey like certain commands, especially from her husband. Like she was up in like this tower that they have on the estate and just walking around, and scared the crap out of the nurse. That was the first time she encountered her the night that she got there. And she's the wife is all like gaunt and like just looks really looks like when you think of a zombie. But her husband like tells her to get, you know, come back down and go to bed. And so she turns around silently and just like walks back. So basically in talking with the doctor that's on the island as well, the nurse learns that there's really, you know, that there's no cure, that this, you know, woman is just going to be like this forever. And just, they need to just do the best for her while she's in this state. And, she starts to fall. At first I thought that she was falling for the brother, Wesley, but cause it seemed like they had some chemistry going on, but, really, she starts actually falling for the husband, Paul. And you start to learn that in the recent past, Wesley actually started to develop feelings for Paul's wife. And they were going to kind of like run away together. And then somehow Jessica got sick and became catatonic. So they're not quite sure what's going on with that. But when Betsy learns that there's really no cure for her, there's no possibility for a cure, she starts talking to some of the servants that live on the estate, and they point to her to a different part of the island where they practice voodoo. And so she decides to take Jessica there to see if there's anything that they can do for her there. And so when she gets there, she's actually brought in inside one of the buildings in secret where nobody can see. And it turns out that it's Paul and Wesley's mom that's there. And what she basically does, she tries to help the people that live there because they're steeped in voodoo superstitions and traditions and stuff. So she'll basically... I can't remember exactly how they posed it, but basically she uses their beliefs and tries to get them medical care. So instead of just saying like boil your water before you drink it, she'll say something like that there's evil spirits in the water, and you know, one of the voodoo gods will if you heat the water up and boil it, then the voodoo god will burn the evil spirits out of your water and it'll be safe to drink. So by like couching it in those terms, that they actually listen to her, and you know, she provides some sort of care for them that way. So this is like kind of like in secret that she's doing this. So anyhow, she says there's nothing we can do for Jessica. You know, there's no voodoo thing. There's nothing, you know, we're trying to practice real medicine, on the down low. And so they take her back, and, I don't quite understand why. Maybe it was back in the times in the '40s or whatever, but this becomes a big deal, on the island with the authorities that, Betsy as the nurse brought Jessica to that part of the island and stuff, and there's going to be an investigation and stuff like that. So what it comes out is that Paul's convinced that it was just, you know, that she just has a medical problem, a psychological problem. And what it sounds like it turned out, although they didn't come right out and definitively make a statement on it, is that his mom found out that Jessica and Wesley were going to run away together and actually practice some of the voodoo and caused her to become a zombie. So Wesley ends up taking her, and they run off into the sea, and they end up just like going under the water and stuff and dying. And then one of the actual zombies from the island on the voodoo side come back and retrieve the bodies. And that's like just the end. So it was kind of a strange ending. It was okay. I probably would give it a 3 out of 5. I gave it a 6 out of 10 for in my scale. But
how did you watch this?
On Amazon Prime. It was on one of the it's one of the movies that were on my list that I'm still trying to complete. So it was like $2.99, so I rented it. It's sort of like you said with Dorian Gray, but you know, not obviously as well established. I'm not sure. Like, I mean, it's classified, I guess, as a horror movie, but there's really like nothing in there that's really like scary. You know, I mean, even the zombies, they're not zombies. They're just, you know, like mindless servants. You know what I mean? They're not attacking anyone. They're not doing anything that would be, you know, scary on screen.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that this picture that I covered won a Academy Award for Best Cinematography, and Best Actress was Angela Lansbury.
Oh, really?
And a lot of them were nominated for art direction. So it was like an artsy-fartsy film, but it was well-received. Angela Lansbury won a Golden Globe, too, for it.
Yeah, this one was definitely, you know, it's like a, you know, like a B-movie of the times, you know, for like a, what, I guess in the 40s, they would classify this as a, I don't know what else to classify it as, but it's, you know, I mean, put it this way, like those movies in the 30s, like the Frankensteins, the Dracula, stuff like that, those were much more clear as a horror movie than this one was. This was more like, I guess, a thriller or suspense, I guess.
Yeah, but that's sort of horror, I think, too.
Yeah, it can be.
It's just like mind horror.
Exactly.
Like this one. This one's like a murder, but it's not like a serial killer murder. You know, people are committing suicide and randomly dying, so yeah, he kills one dude. But so did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre guy, the guy that the movie's based on, Ed Gein. I think he only killed one dude. The rest of the bodies were bodies he dug up from the grave, like from already dead people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you haven't seen the movie Ed Gein?
No, not yet.
You need to watch that.
Is that good?
Well, it's a 5 out of 10 for you. It is a 7 out of 10 for me.
Oh, boy. 7 out of 10. What are you drinking?
It's your wine, baby.
All right. You have to get your plug in before the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's. I love this stuff.
And what time is it there?
9:02 now, because we have to roll our clocks back, but my mind says it's 10:02.
Yeah.
That seems pretty early for cheer wine.
No, because I don't like coffee. So what's the difference?
That's a good point.
Yeah. I always drink soda in the morning because that's like my sugar caffeine.
Does Cheerwine have caffeine?
I don't think so, but it's got the sugar, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't you get enough sugar from that cereal that you eat? Little kid cereal?
I eat... Why, are you making fun of my cereal? Little kid cereal? What the hell?
A little bit. Just a little bit.
My new one's vanilla cinnamon Lucky Charms. It's very delicious, by the way.
That sounds interesting.
I don't need that adult shit.
You don't need to eat adult cereal, but maybe something healthier.
It is healthy. It has a little heart association thing on the side.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they've changed in the days since I ate Lucky Charms.
Yeah.
I had coffee, nuts, and an apple.
Whose nuts did you have?
I don't know. We got them at the store.
Are you sure it wasn't nuts and a banana?
Christopher.
What? Making sure you remember what you eat for breakfast.
You sound like a mom when they get upset with their child because you call them by their full name.
Yeah, I don't know his middle name. Otherwise, I would have done that too.
My mom would say Michael John Myers, and you would say Christopher Ivy.
Chris, what's your middle name now?
It's Michael.
Oh, there Christopher Michael.
Yeah, I was named after
me.
Yep.
Right.
This guy in Colorado.
That's
well,
right.
He was in New Mexico at the time.
That's true.
Yeah.
My parents said, there's this 10-year-old in New Mexico that we...
You would not believe the comic book collection he has. We're going to name you after him.
That's right.
I'm looking up cinnamon vanilla Lucky Charms.
To see if I'm telling the truth.
Frosted cinnamon oat cereal. It's limited edition.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it has oats, so that's good for your heart, right?
Yeah.
I think that's how it works.
And marshmallow, which is really good. At least they haven't proven it yet, but I'm pretty sure that marshmallow is really good for you. If you look at anything, though, even water, there was an article done on water that you could be causing yourself a big problem with drinking water because of the plastics and stuff and bottled water.
Oh, the bottled water, yeah.
Oh, it's not the water that's the problem. It's the plastic bottle.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, depending on where you live and stuff, the tap water could be even worse.
Yep. There's all kinds of stuff if you don't filter it, and even some of the stuff could come through the filter.
Yeah.
Well,
don't turn it around. Well,
no, I was just going to say
I drink from the fountain of youth. It's perfect water.
No, I was just going to say that when it comes down to it, we're all going to die. So.
Yeah, that's the truth. And you might as well be happy.
Yeah. But I just like to tease you.
I could never eat good cereal when I was younger, and I can't do it now.
What would you consider a good cereal?
Like Raisin Bran, Cheerios, Chex.
I'm okay with Raisin Bran every once in a while.
Honey and Oats or like non-sugary cereal.
I don't really. Cheerios are too plain.
Well, that's what. When I was a kid, my mom used to make me eat Cheerios when I couldn't get my Apple Jacks or Count Dracula or any of those cereals.
Oh, Apple Jacks. That's one of my favorites.
Apple Jacks was great. And Fruity Pebbles. And I love, like, Frankenberry and Booberry. They used to sell them all the time, not just during Halloween.
That's right.
And, sometimes we'd have Cheerios, and what I would do is my mom had this little thing of sugar, you know, and I would just go and pour like all kinds of sugar over the. I was probably eating more sugar with my Cheerios than I was with Fruity Pebbles. That's how much sugar I'd pour on the thing.
Stacy's like you, Mike. Before we had kids, we didn't like if I wanted like a quote kid cereal, I wouldn't have to worry because Stacy always kept them in stock.
That's good.
Because she would have that for dinner sometimes, like especially when she was working retail and like she'd get home late or whatever.
It makes a good bowl of cereal. Dinner when you don't have anything to eat.
Yeah.
Just have some cereal. But I like Frosted Rice Krispies like that. That's like my usual go-to.
What about those mini wheats? Those little mini wheats that have the sugar on top?
Nah, because I don't.
Oh,
really
I
like
love
the
those.
Wheat.
I could eat those plain.
I can eat Chex though. Like Chex, not as a cereal. Just don't pour milk on it.
Yeah,
like,
no, I don't.
You know
like
how
Chex,
you have Chex Mix? I like that.
I like Chex Mix. And I eat everything except for the actual Chex.
Really, I like the Chex. I love the texture of a
Yeah.
Chex.
Not my favorite.
Well, Chris, what did you
Chris, what
do?
movie did you see?
I didn't watch any movies that were old, but you were talking about Wesley. I did watch some more Star Trek.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Princess Bride.
Nope. I don't think Wesley was in any episodes though, because
Wesley's the name of the Carrie Bates's character.
who?
Wesley.
I don't think he was in. I don't think Wesley Crusher was in
Oh,
any
not
episodes of.
maybe not Wesley Crusher, but
Yeah.
okay.
Of Star Trek, because I had started watching years ago. I had started watching Star Trek, the original series from the beginning, and I've just been working my way through the franchise, which obviously takes a long time because there's a lot of episodes, but
Yeah, like the original series, right? I mean, it was only 3 seasons, but they had 84 episodes in every season.
yeah, I think, well, yeah, there was more than normal. But I watched all those a while back, and I watched the animated series, and then I've just been watching everything in order to the different movies as they come out, mixing in, and because some of them, like the ones that the original series cast movies that came out during after the Next Generation started airing, I watched them in between the Next Generation episodes that they came out in the theaters and everything like that. So but I've taken long breaks at times. I watch it as long as I'm into it, and then I need a break and I move on to something else, and then if I decide to go back to it, I go back to it. And so a
It's the
little while
same way
back,
that Mike reads Joyland.
yeah, basically. Basically, I just watching one episode, I spend twice as long as Mike spends in a month on Toyland. But so I picked back up. I was around season six of Next Generation, and now I'm about
So you were quite a long way in.
I've watched a bunch. I've got about I think eight or nine episodes left in season six, and but I also started Deep Space Nine because that started about halfway through season six of Star Trek, The Next Generation. I don't know why I said the whole thing. So I'm watching now. I actually sat down and figured out, and I'm watching them in the order that they aired. So I'll watch one, or there was like Deep Space Nine. They aired like the first five episodes of Deep Space Nine before they aired another episode of Next Generation. So then I'm like,
Why did they do that?
I don't know, maybe just to get the show running, or it was kind of, it started, the first season of Deep Space Nine has 20 episodes instead of like the normal 26 that most shows ran back then per season. And it started in January. So it kind of started while The Next Generation was in its kind of holiday break, I guess.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And maybe they also just wanted to get it rolling, get a few episodes out there. So yeah, so now I've been alternating back and forth. Mostly there's occasions where two episodes of one or two episodes of the other aired before another one aired. I don't know why. I don't know if it adds that much to the experience. I mean, there's a little bit of crossover in the beginning, because the the start of Deep Space Nine comes out of a Next Generation plotline about the, like, the Federation takes over Deep Space Nine because
the Cardassians.
Yeah, the, like, Kim and...
I didn't even know they were in this. I gotta be honest, I don't know a lot about Deep Space Nine, but I can't
believe... But you do know a lot about the Cardassians.
Well, I can't believe that even with me not knowing much about it, that I didn't know that the Cardassians were in it. You would have thought I would have
looked
that.
You would have heard, somewhere along the line, you'd have found that out.
Exactly.
Surprisingly, so the Cardassians, they had occupied the planet that Deep Space Nine, that used to be their space station, and they had used it outside of the planet that they were occupying, which was Bajoran. The Bajoran people, they're like one of the main characters on Deep Space Nine. Nana, or that's her, the actress Kira Nerys, she's the like second in command to Sisko. She's got like, the Bajorans are the ones that look like basically like humans, that they just have the ridges across the top of their nose. They're kind of, the Cardassian occupation is stopped in Next Generation, and then the Federation comes in, and it's a cooperation between the Federation and the Bajorans to try to establish this new relationship. And then the other main thing is that they discover a wormhole nearby to the Gamma Quadrant. So it's been kind of interesting. I know, like, Deep Space Nine has a lot of fans. It's pretty highly regarded. I think I've seen a lot of people say that it's their favorite. And one of the reasons I think that is because it kind of breaks out of the episodic nature of the original and Next Generation, where you kind of had, and this is how like a lot of TV was up until a certain point, where you had a lot of one and done episodes,
like Mission of the Week or whatever.
Yeah, and you occasionally had a two-parter, but otherwise it's just, and Next Generation was syndicated, so it was meant to just be pick up and watch, and you didn't see a lot of change carry over from one episode to another. And Deep Space Nine was kind of a part of the transition of TV towards more like what it's today, where you have a lot more ongoing plot lines, and it's a little bit harder to jump in on a random episode, but it doesn't matter because you can catch up easily on Netflix or whatever, which you couldn't do back in the day. And I think that's what a lot of people like about Deep Space Nine, is that it was the first show that was produced by someone other than Gene Roddenberry, and it was like the first post Gene Roddenberry Star Trek show. And but it, so far what I've seen, I think I've seen like 10 or 11 episodes of it. It's been decent, but not great. But so it's been good compared to the way that Next Generation started out, because Next Generation kind of had a really rough start. So it's been better than what I remember of that. Compared to where Next Generation is at right now, and granted, these are very well-established characters by this point, it doesn't feel as strong as Next Generation in its sixth season, which is probably, it's not really a fair comparison, but you know, I'm definitely looking forward to watching more because it hasn't yet really gotten into that ongoing storyline kind of nature of it. And but it is kind of what already is kind of apparent about it is the characters are a lot more rough around the edges than either of the previous two Star Trek shows. You know, two of them don't work for the Federation, two of the regular cast. It's a cooperation, you know, so there's tension there, and the characters are a little more flawed, which the characters on Star Trek and Next Generation are interesting, fun characters, but they're not as flawed as... Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been interesting. Now there's something I find kind of comforting about 90s science fiction. I didn't watch a lot of it. I was like in late middle school, I think, at this time when these episodes I've been watching have been airing, and I did catch the occasional Next Generation episode on TV after school, and I enjoyed it for what it was, but because it was science fiction and stuff, but I wasn't like a big Star Trek person or anything at any point. And I don't know if I can totally put my finger on it, but there's something that I enjoy about this era of television science fiction. I think maybe part of it is that the technology is good enough that you're not often distracted by the special effects. But it's also...
The grunge music.
Yeah. Yeah, the Nirvana that they use on Next Generation is really, really suitable.
Pearl Jam.
Oh, I love Pearl Jam.
Soundgarden.
I'm glad that they made the theme song Pearl Jam. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jean-Luc spoken.
You didn't think it would work, but you know, it's really amazing how well it just seamlessly fits in.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been neat. There's something about watching it the way that it aired. I kind of find fun. There might be some intentional connections, but a lot of it's just like, what did somebody at the time, you know, there might not be any intentional comparison between the latest episode of one show or the other, but if someone was watching them both the same week or something, they'd naturally like make associations in their mind that maybe are just superficial, but are kind of fun to see if they pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So I might, when I get to that point, I might mix in X-Files too.
X-Files?
And other shows. Because X-Files started in the, I want to say, fall of 93.
I don't think that was related to Star Trek, though.
No, it's not. But it's another science fiction-y kind of 90s TV show that aired at the same time that, you know, people probably, there's probably a lot of people that both watched both Star Trek and X-Files. The main thing will be to continue with Star Trek. So when Next Generation ends, shortly after is when Voyager started. I mean, I don't know if I kind of implied, but I didn't watch, besides the random Next Generation episode, I didn't watch any mm-hmm. Star Trek, you know, and I didn't really watch much TV in general in the 90s. So a lot of, like, all these Star Trek shows and some other highly rated 90s science fiction shows like X-Files, like Babylon 5, like Farscape. I've never watched any of that stuff.
Me neither. I mean, I was like you. I watched a handful of Next Generation. For a while, I like tried to get, I don't want to say I tried to get into it and didn't, but there was nothing wrong with it. It's just that my
tastes came and went, and like, you know, I watched a few of them, and then I didn't feel like the need to keep up on it. Never saw Deep Space Nine. I watched the old ones, the original ones, here and there in reruns, like on a weekend or something. But it wasn't until Voyager that I actually like sat down and like watched like a season, like as it was being aired.
Mm-hmm. I tried.
And what was the other one? Enterprise or something?
Enterprise, yeah, it was the last one for a long
I watched some of Voyager and I watched all of Enterprise, which at that point, it was the, like you said, it was like the last one that they tried airing.
Yeah, it had Quantum Leap in it.
Yeah.
I didn't watch any of them.
Nothing? No?
I only watched the original Star Trek. I tried to watch Next Generation with the first season and build on it, and I just couldn't. I just don't like the characters at all in Next Generation, because I used to study, I think it was college, when Barb used to watch Next Generation, and I just, they don't have, like, the camaraderie that Spock, like, the family feel. I don't like their banter between each other. I just can't get into it.
I wouldn't say they ever have like the same feel to, but they definitely develop the characters a lot better after. It takes a couple seasons to get there, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a really cool episode, though. Just to mention one, I mean, I've watched a bunch, but going back to. What you just said, though, one episode I watched that I really liked was called Relics. It was the fourth episode of the sixth season, and the reason I mention it is because they find a old Federation transport vessel, like a wreck, and they end up finding Scotty. Because he was on there, and the ship was going to be destroyed. Well, you know, not totally destroyed, but because there's obviously a wreck still there. But in order to save his life, and he tries to save the life of one other person, he puts himself in a transport buffer. So basically, like when they normally use the transporter, because he's such a good engineer, he figured out a way to keep himself alive in stasis in the middle, basically like in the transport. And so they bring him back out, and the episode's kind of about him adjusting to, you know, 75 years later, and seeing the new Enterprise, and just kind of dealing with the fact that. At first, he's kind of, everyone has respect for him and everything, but he sort of gets on people's nerves a little bit. Like, I've seen this theme kind of played out in other fiction where it's just, you have your old guard kind of, you know, they're at retirement age or past it, and they still want to feel useful, but they sort of get on the nerves of the younger generation and stuff, and I really like Scotty from watching all the original series stuff, and I thought he was really good in the movies too, as he gets old, as James Doohan got older, and honestly it's a really great episode for that character because he gets a lot of different emotional things to do. So I thought they did a good job of making it seem not just a good gimmicky way to bring one of the original series cast back to the show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty neat episode. Just even if you just it would be pretty easy just to pick up and watch that one episode just to see if you're just a fan of the original series or something.
You know, They announced two guests for the Nickel City Con already, Chris.
Uh-huh.
And Jonathan Frakes was the first one. And who does he play? I forgot his name.
He's one of the reasons I couldn't watch the first season.
I don't remember. I don't remember his name. Is it Riker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He does those ridiculous poses that I just can't stand. It's like, what is he doing?
But the other one is cool. I'm excited. I'm kind of interested in. It's one of the guys that played the Gill Monster in Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, he's
played him in two different movies. Basically, he's like one of the only people still alive from the movie, and he's going to be there.
Wow, that would be impressive. That guy's got to be old.
I know. I'm
he's got to be in his 80s or 90s for sure.
I would guess so. Yeah.
That sounded so anticlimactic to me after you said Jonathan Frakes was going to be there.
I'm more excited about this guy.
I am too.
I really could care less about Jonathan. Riku Browning is his name, and he was born in 1930.
What did he do? He was the ass end of the donkey and what?
No, he was the creature from the Black Lagoon, for God's sakes.
Well, maybe if the actual creature was there, it'd be interesting.
He was a creature from the Black Lagoon in the underwater scenes, apparently.
He wore the costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's he going to say? Like, it was wet?
I don't know, but he's probably got good stories.
I'll bet you he does.
He's got to be pretty old, huh?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it seems like he's 89.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm excited.
When is that?
Not until May.
Ah.
That was his first acting role. He played in The Creature from the Black Lagoon and Revenge of the Creature, which I'd never seen.
Me neither.
Oh, and The Creature Walks Among Us, which I've never seen.
He's
back to back.
Jonathan Frakes. There's a lot of different Star Trek actors that have gone on to direct, but he's probably the most successful one. He directed a lot of episodes of Next Generation, but he also directed a couple of the movies, and he's done a lot of directing since. He actually went out. Like, some of them, they took the chance to do some directing while they were on their particular shows and stuff. But he actually went on and directed episodes of other Star Trek series, and directed a lot of episodes of other shows like Roswell and Leverage and NCIS Los Angeles and Burn Notice, and he's actually turned it into a really successful career as a TV director, which is kind of cool.
Well, good for him. He'll be here in May.
Yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I don't like to wait in line for to meet
I'll wait in line for the creature, man, and maybe I'll bring my DVD and he can sign that. Listen to some stories.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Well, my next book is a book that I wanted to cover on my other podcast, but it'll never win, so I'm covering it here. Ambush okay. Bug from 1985. Issue 1, which is a homage to Superman cover. Action, I think. Maybe it's Superman. I can't remember. Superman. This is probably a Superman cover.
Yeah, that's the Superman cover.
Yeah, he's jumping out of the middle.
Yeah, so we had a little exchange on Twitter about this.
Yeah.
I think maybe I have to, because I have these issues, I might have to pull them out and reread them.
Well, in 85, shit, I was still in high school. And I didn't get it. I didn't
no,
get this.
No, me neither.
I wasn't ready for this.
I just thought it was dumb.
Now I think I'm in a different place, and I wanted to read it especially after enjoying Gwenpool so much. And he's kind of like one of the first characters to do that stare at the screen and talk to you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's Keith Giffen. And over the years, I've become more and more of a fan than when he first broke out in Legion. I think it was the Deluxe Baxter run. Is like where they're all wearing, it's real dark, and they're wearing like real costumes with pockets and stuff. And they have all these weird monsters where you'll see like smiles, and then the rest of it's black, and like just weird art. And I didn't like it then, and I didn't care for like Trencher when he went to Image and stuff like that. And now I love it. So it's a change, and I wanted to go see what Giffen was doing. So Ambush Bug, I own this series. I don't think I bought the others, because I didn't like this. But now I'm rereading it, and it opens up with like there's gonna be an invasion, and these invaders want to steal everybody's comic books, which is bad because they'd be coming over to my house probably before your guys's.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, and they'd steal all my comic books, and Barb would be like, "Yes, take them. Yeah, don't take the
That's why
comic
would that's why they
books."
would come to your house first, is because Barb would give
Yeah,
directions.
she'd be like beaming lights to him, saying, "Here's,
Land here.
yeah, and take the cheer wine while you're at it." But this is a very political book, and it's kind of funny being with what's going on. But he got out of a psychiatric ward because he was released because his doctor couldn't pretty much take it. And he's in an apartment that used to have a phone number for a pizza place, so a bunch of people call and they're ordering pizza to go, and he's a private investigator, and he answers the phone every single time and doesn't tell him like, "Yeah, I can't get you pizza," or whatever. He just starts talking to him, and this huge dump truck hits a pothole, and a stuffed animal baby out of the garbage comes flying through his window, and he gives it a name called Cheeks the Toy Wonder. And Cheeks plays a real big part because it's a doll that's his sidekick. So he dresses up, he's listening to the police scanner, and it says, "Attention, there are terrorists in the warehouse." And these terrorists are making these weird demands. They don't like left-wing guys, and they want the house to pass a new nerve gas weapon. And the house is going to reject it, and they hate these left-wing losers, and they want to make sure the Prez gets the funds he wanted to make this nerve gas production, and they demand that they'll blow up this building if they don't get what they want. And they capture an old woman in the office building there because they say she has no rights here and she's a Democrat. And they know she voted for Jimmy Carter in 1976 and 1980, so they capture her hostage. And it's pretty much the doll trying to take out these terrorists, these Republican terrorists. And it's Ambush Bug just throwing this doll at the people and them freaking out, and also diving on, falling on top of the bomb that they set. One guy recognizes it's a doll and starts beating the hell out of the doll and knocks his eyes out, and then he freaks out because he's like, "You'll never be able to watch a 3D movie again. This means war." Ambush Bug's pissed. And he goes after this guy. He clobbers him good, man. He gets a baseball bat, and he goes, "I've always wanted to hit a homer," and he swings it and he clocks him, man. He hits him good. And so that guy's out cold, and then he takes out it, rule. One of the rules is never hit a woman, and he breaks that rule because she had the old lady hostage, and he punched that woman out and took her out and saved the old woman. And then the doll is next to the bomb, and the bomb goes off, and then you have this weird intermission about like Ambush Bug merchandising, and his fitness workout book, and then a data sheet about Erwin Schwab and what his powers are, and his turn on, his ambitions are to fight for truth, justice in the American way and pull a profit. His turn-ons are people who buy any first issue of anything. That'd be love, Bill Bomer. God dang. He loves bubble baths, cushioned potty seats. I hate cushioned potty seats. I like the cold on my ass. The best of Carson, data sheets, and royalties. His turn-offs are runny eggs, ring around the collar, tropical fish lying belly up, Smurfs, Smurfette, the Smurf Tones, the Smurf Griffin. He doesn't like the Smurfs. Favorite movies, The Ruling Class, At Long Last Love. I've never heard of them. Them, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Yes, baby. That's one of the best. Dog of Norway and Catwoman on the Moon. So I've seen one of those films. I haven't seen any of the others. Favorite food, mixed nuts, pumpkin munchkins, pizza, Jell-O, granulated candies, the ones you suck on from a straw. I don't get it. Favorite place, Black Flag Roach Motel, ideal evening, sitting on a white sand beach, feeding copies of Thriller into the paper shredder. I guess he doesn't like Michael Jackson. I don't know. Pixie sticks. Oh, that's what that's referring to.
Oh, maybe.
Biggest joy, mailing shredded copies of Dick Giannardo along with a little box of that laughs when you turn it over. So he's shredding crap that goes to, it, I think Keith Giffen's notorious for fucking with editors. Like I've been to his panels, and he did a lot with the editors to fuck with them. Because he didn't like to do stuff that they told him. So it then has a weird thing, Late Night by Ambush Bug, like a shot with David Letterman, and it's a woman picking her seat. I don't know what it is, but she's pulling the miniskirt out of her ass. And then the story sort of concludes. He goes back to his hotel. He took out the terrorists, even though they passed the bill anyway. They passed the bill to make the nerve gas. He gets back. He orders a pizza, and he goes to eat the pizza, and Darkseid's there waiting for him. And that's how it ends.
So you enjoyed it this time around?
I did.
Are you going to read the rest of the mini?
Of course.
Okay. Very interesting.
And I'll probably pick up what I don't have and finish the Ambush Bug collection.
Despite the fact that I don't remember ever liking this. So this was in 1985. So I also bought the Stocking Stuffer that came out in 1986 and Son of Ambush Bug from 1986 as well. For some reason, I kept buying them.
I have the Ambush Bug Nothing Special.
Yeah, I don't have those. Those are later.
I got the Stocking Stuffer. I have part of Ambush Bug Year None. I still need 3-4. I guess I need 3-7. Which is interesting because our database, at least my database, doesn't have 6. What the hell? Does it jump from 5 to 7?
Which one? Year None? Yep, that's what I show the same thing.
It's weird. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Probably.
Because it goes 5 and then it says 7 of 6.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Wow. I love that cover to number 3 where he's like in bed with Mrs. Ambush Bug.
That
looks like an Amanda Connor cover. It is an Amanda Connor cover. I need to get those.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm only missing 3-6. Well, really 7 because of the weird numbering.
You know what's weird? For Son of Ambush Bug, I have 1-5, but I don't have number 6. So I guess maybe I decided that was it. I'm done with this.
You can't take it anymore.
Or or maybe I never realized that there was a number six.
I have a Son of Ambush Bug too. Mm-hmm. So I do own that.
So you have quite a bit.
I'm only missing the latest one, the one that came around right before I think New 52 started. Maybe it was during 52. I don't remember. It was pretty late. The Year None?
Year was that? 52 started in 2013?
2013 or 2011, somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
So what do you got for us?
Oh, what do I have? So I'm still on my my Halloween kick. So I read that Tales from the Crypt that I bought about a month ago or so. And this was Tales from the Crypt number 35. And it had, I think, four different stories in here. They said they're doing like a supernatural thing, which sounds like that could be any issue. But it had like a vampire story, a werewolf story, a mummy story, and I forget the other one was like a voodoo one. So the first story was the werewolf story, and basically this family, two sons and a father, came from Hungary to move to the Midwest of the United States, and shortly after they found a mutilated body in their field, and it looks like it was torn up by a beast, and they made it a point to say there's no animals in that area that would do that, and the dad's immediately says that must be a werewolf. So the younger brother, he doesn't know to keep this quiet from the rest of the town because, they think the dad is afraid that the rest of the town is going to think that they're ignorant, people from a backwards country believing in werewolves, and said, they won't believe us anyhow, so let's keep that quiet. But the younger brother starts telling all of his friends that his dad says it's a werewolf, and the sheriff overhears it too, and sure enough, like there's another death, another person has been killed, and the sheriff and all the rest of the townspeople come and confront the family, saying that there was no problems until they got there, and that they know that the dad is actually a werewolf. So they carved a silver bullet and they shoot and kill the dad. So the younger brother says to the older, like, was he a werewolf? And he's like, no, I was just in, I was just visiting him in the room when earlier, and he was sleeping in bed. There was no way that he could have been a werewolf. And they said, well, you know what? We have to take our vengeance. We have to prove that he was innocent by killing the actual werewolf. So they get slingshots and they take a silver dollar and they file down all the edges, so it's like really, really sharp. So they each do that. And the next full moon, the next month, they go out into the woods and start looking around, and the younger brother thinks he hears something, but the older brother doesn't. So they separate to start looking, and the older brother suddenly hears a scream, and he comes running and sees the werewolf has went and attacked and killed presumably his brother on the ground. So he kills the werewolf, and then in the typical Tales from the Crypt fashion, it turns out that after he kills the werewolf, he turns back into his human self, and his brother was actually the werewolf. And he had just killed a villager. So the next story is a vampire story in which a guy is coming to visit his sister on the way to cross country. And so when he gets off at the train station, he notices there's like nobody around. He asks for directions to his sister's house. They give it to him, but they keep telling him he needs to get inside before the sun goes down. It's almost sundown. But then he sees a restaurant that's open, so he goes in, and the waiter explains that they're just about to close. Everyone's finishing their meals, and it's because of the vampires. They have to close everything down. And so he can't believe that they believe this stuff, but he again gets directions to his sister's, and he makes it to his sister's house just as it's getting dark. And she goes into the whole vampire story as well, and he can't believe that she believes it too. But, you know, she explains that like 17 people have been murdered already and their blood has been drained. And he can't believe that his sister believes that it's a vampire. He's like, well, it might be like some sort of crazy maniac, but it definitely can't be a vampire. There's no such thing. So he goes to bed. He finds he can't sleep, and he gets up in the middle of the night, just walking around the streets. And he's like, yep, nobody around. Everyone's afraid of these vampires. But then he goes back to that restaurant, and the lights are on, and people are going inside. So he goes in and says, well, you know what? I didn't get a meal before, so I'm going to sit down and eat. And the waiter, it's a different waiter now, and he comes and he says, you know, do you want the dinner? He's like, yeah. It's like, what's the menu? He says, juice, soup, roast with French fries, coffee, and sherbet. And so he said, oh, that sounds great. So he starts with tomato. They give him tomato juice, and or he says, ah, tomato juice. And the waiter says, very funny. And he's drinking. He's like, oh, it tastes weird. It tastes like saltier than normal. And then he's having the soup, and he's like, oh, this doesn't taste right either. And the waiter asks him if he wants his blood clots medium or well done. And he's like, what? And so he spits out his soup. And that draws the attention, of course, to the waiter. And he's like, we've got an intruder. We've got an intruder. And everyone gets up and start crowding around him. And there's this big mirror in the restaurant that he had noticed previously, but had been covered up with a curtain for this time. Well, they take the curtain down, and he's the only person he can see in the mirror. Of course, everyone else, their reflections aren't showing. And he's now surrounded, and his sister is actually there too, saying, I tried to warn you. I told you to stay home. She's a vampire too. And just like people don't cook at home anymore, we vampires don't like to go out and do our own hunting. So we go to the restaurant to eat. And sorry, but you're going to be the next dish. So they string him up, and they call for the tap, and they string him up upside down, and they stick a tap in his jugular vein, and yeah, fresh juice. You like that, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was a commentary on how nobody does home cooking anymore.
Yeah.
The vampires are playing along. The third story is a voodoo one. It's a guy, a younger man. He learns that this particular woman is older, 10 years older than him, but is very rich, and he wants to marry her for the money. So he goes to this shady guy who says that he can help him if he brings hair clippings of both the woman and himself. He can make likenesses of them, and then she'll end up being attracted, and they'll get married. However, whatever happens to the actual dolls will happen to the people too. So you have to be extremely careful. Make sure that they're always always taken very good care for. Said I actually recommend that you put them somewhere safe under glass, but make sure that you keep enough air in there. Otherwise, you or your wife could actually suffocate in real life. So that, sure enough, it works. They get married. He makes it a big point of like this, these wedding cake toppers are, you know, so beautiful, and he wants to decorate, you know, actually put them up somewhere. So every time they walk by, they can remember, you know, how happy they were at their wedding and stuff. And so he puts them in a dining room area, and puts some glass over him, and suddenly she starts saying, oh, so stuffy up here, I need to lie down. He's like, oops, I forgot. And so he manages to prop a little matchstick so air can get through. And just as he's losing his breath as well. So he goes upstairs and she says she's all better. Then as time goes on, he's introduced to this young blonde woman that he becomes very attracted to, of course. And he starts to get ideas of how he could have both his wife's wealth and the blonde woman's, and marry the blonde woman. So he decides, which I don't know why she goes along with this, but she's like, he says, I'm going to put these two, the figures under separate glass jars. They'll look better that way. And so he puts his under a glass jar that has holes in it, and he puts hers under one that does not. And they call it, she falls down. She can't breathe. They call a doctor. And of course she ends up dying. So shortly after that, he gets married to the new woman, and he's like, oh, he's like, yeah, let's go ahead and use these wedding cake toppers as well. And so they're looking, the bakery's looking at the original bride topper, and it's like, oh, it looks like it's like rotting and stuff. It smells terrible. So he's like, oh, we'll just throw it away. We'll make a new one for you, and we'll just put the groom on up there. So at night, they're in bed, and you see the rotted bride cake topper lower herself from the garbage can, go across the room, climb up onto the table, and take the groom wedding the cake topper and smashed it to the ground. And so then you hear just in the background like this shriek as the new wife just witnessed her husband just like actually like fall into several thousands of pieces right before her eyes. And then we have one more, which is a quick mummy story. This is a shorter one. And there's three archaeologists trying to dig.
It seems very Halloween oriented with monsters.
Yeah, it was like a monster.
Like not like a killer one, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's where they're going when they said like a supernatural one. There's a lot of that, those types of horror monsters or even...
Well, zombie, I think of zombie, as like yeah, a horror exactly. genre yeah. too. So
right, exactly.
Like in that vein.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. These three archaeologists are digging up a uncovered or undiscovered tomb of a famous pharaoh, and two of the archaeologists are younger, and the other guy is older. But he doesn't want to hear it. He said, ah, I'm as healthy as a 20-year-old just because I had a slight heart attack. And so they're making sure that he's not like lifting anything too hard or isn't doing too much work. They're constantly reminding him, you know, just be careful and so on. And so they end up finding the tomb, and it's just got all these jewels, all these gemstones, all this gold. They can't believe it. The older man said, you know, it's the greatest discovery that's ever been made. They find a perfectly preserved mummy. And the older guy says, oh, my God, we need to get a message back to the museum. And the two younger men are like, if we do that, then the museum's going to want all this. But we found it, and we want to keep it. So finally, they pretend that the old man has dissuaded them from taking it for themselves. So they form a plan where the one is going to dress up like a zombie, or like a mummy rather, and come in and scare the old guy into another heart attack. So they hear a shriek in the middle of the night. The one younger man and the older guy get up, and they're like, oh, Thomas's bed is empty. He must be down in the tomb. So they go rushing over, and of course there's a zombie start coming towards them, and the younger guy's like, oh my God, the curse on the door said that, you know, whoever opened it up would be killed. It must be the zombie. And the guy's like, oh, my heart, and he dies. So the other younger man congratulates the other guy for the good work. But he says, guess what, though? I don't want to share with you either. And he pulls out a pistol and shoots the mummy right in the stomach. But he keeps firing, and the guy and the mummy doesn't die. He's like, Thomas, die, die. And he ends up being strangled to death. But not before he turns and runs into the actual tomb, and he sees that Thomas is already lying dead in the sarcophagus, and it was actually a real mummy. And that's the end of that particular issue. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed reading that. I have one of the first volume of the hardcover of the Tales from the Crypt, but I haven't read a lot of these, so this was fun to read an original Tales from the Crypt. Like I think I had said when I first bought it, I was excited to get one. I didn't own any EC comics at all, so this was my first one. They're expensive.
I bought one recently in really good shape, but it was not a horror one. It was
what did you get?
It was a medical one.
Oh, I think I remember you posting. Yeah. I love those. Obviously I know why they're expensive, but I wish they weren't as expensive as they are, because I would love to get a few more. But even if you're getting one in BG or whatever, they still could be at like $100 and something.
Yeah.
But they're good. What do you got, Chris? Are you still there? I think I put Chris to sleep.
Yeah, I'm still here. Well, I was trying to look up what I read on DC Universe app, and the comic's not coming up. Last time this happened, I think it was because I needed to update the app, but I haven't been able. I've been trying to do that, but I haven't been able to do it yet. So I might just bring it up on the.
You might have to wing it.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I didn't read it. I read it a week or two ago, so I don't remember.
Do you remember what book it was?
Yeah. But that doesn't do me much good as far as talking about it. So yeah, let me work on that. Mike, if you got something else you want to talk about, go ahead.
Yeah, my last one is really quick. It is me and Bill. Bill found a gem on the latest Geek Brunch, and it was an Eric Larson book that we didn't even know he did, but it was by Mr. Moses called Champion, and it's by a company called Water. It's not even in our database, so don't even try to look it up.
Did you?
It doesn't exist.
What the heck?
But it was. If you want to look it up, you can go to mycomicshop.com, because that's where
I
found it. That's
where this database.
That's where he found it. Well, I entered it, so it should be in your next update if they accept it. Yeah. But it was an independent book by this guy called Mr. Moses, and most of the stuff, the superhero work, is about him. But it included a black and white comic called The Spider. I think it's spelled with a Y in it. And Bill talked about it, and I got it. So I dedicated my comicshop.com. I was like, why do I not own every single thing that Larson has ever done? So I worked on it, with the exception of the thing, the very first graphic. I forget what it's called, Graphic Illustrated, that had the first Savage Dragon. I'll never find that, because there's only like 5 copies in existence. But I wanted everything. Not
what was the name of the company?
You can find it in if pull it up on mycomicshop.com.
That's where I am. It's just Champion.
Champions, and it's by Wonderworld.
Champions. Okay. I got it. Thank
you. Yeah. But I put an entry in our database for it, because it didn't exist.
Okay.
I couldn't find any record of it. A matter of fact, I tweeted Eric Larson on it, because inside of the book, you find out it's like from 1986, but its copyright is 2000. So I was confused on when it came out. So I asked him if it came out before Megaton, or if Megaton was before this one, and he said Megaton was before it. So my hope was that it was his first paid work that's undocumented, but it wasn't.
This is literally the only comic book by Wonderworld Express on mycomicshop.com. So I don't know if they ever made any other comic books besides this one.
I don't think they did. That's why I was like excited when Bill finds gems like this and RAM and all that kind of stuff. I get so excited, and it kind of got me pumped up to like. So I went to the Wikipedia page on Eric Larson, and I wanted everything he wrote, everything he drew, anything he inked, anything he drew, and I picked up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from Image, and I didn't own this stuff, and I didn't know he had anything to do with it, but Eric Larson drew the covers, and on issue one he inked it. The writer is Gary Carlson, who's worked with him on Vanguard and Frank Fosco. I think he's worked with him before. But this is a black and white comic, which surprised me. I thought it would be in color, not like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but in color. And it was kind of hard to tell which turtle was which, because I just don't know what weapons one carries, and I'm just not that familiar with them. And a lot of them weren't even wearing their masks. So it starts off as an action adventure where these mechanical robots are going to capture all the turtles. And it looks like they're after a Splinter, and they've already gotten Donatello. So they've captured Donatello, and the rest of them are fighting, and they actually capture Splinter. And there's this, you could tell this is Eric Larson inks because of the way he draws this woman. And even one of the turtles says, "Whoa, get first dibs on that tush." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah." And she's got a knife to a Splinter, and it looks like she's going to cut his throat. And they essentially take Splinter and Donatello, and the turtles are left with, all that's left is like a robot, and that robot is sort of like it's pretty cool because it's like a Terminator. You know how a Terminator, you could blast and cut, and it starts to regenerate? Well, it's a pretty indestructible robot, other than once they decapitated it, it couldn't like reconstruct itself. So they take Splinter off. They were actually celebrating somebody's the turtles' birthday party, because that's when Splinter had found the turtles, and that's when they got disrupted by this gang of robotic ninjas and this robot woman. And the helicopter actually ended up blowing up, and Donatello did get out. And one of the turtles, though, got burnt pretty bad. He looks like his face just caught fire, Raph. And it looks permanent. Like, it looks like he ain't going to be recovering in this series, but I guess we'll find out.
I remember Paul Tessner talking about that, like, one of them permanently was, like, a robot, and one was, like, disfigured. So I bet you that's right.
Yeah,
that just stayed that way for that whole series. That like was really like.
Yeah, maybe Donnie is like a robot, and Raph is the one that got his face really burned really bad.
Mm-hmm. That's what it seems like. Yeah.
But I liked it. I really liked it. It was black and white. It was a lot of fighting and action, and I mostly liked it because Eric inked it. I didn't think he inked it. I thought he just drew the cover. And that's why I really bought the Ninja Turtles, is so I could get all his covers, because Eric Larson drew all of the Ninja Turtle covers. But the first issue he inked. he had some help, but you can tell by Chance Wolf, but you can tell it's the Eric Larson inks, especially when he draws the woman.
I'm just looking at all the covers.
Yeah. I bought a lot of Eric Larson. The one that I'm that I didn't even know existed, and which shocks me because I know a lot about comics, is there is a Fantastic Four series that Eric Larson did called The Fantastic Four, the World's Greatest Comic Book or something like that. And it takes place after issue 100. So it's like if Stan Lee and Jack Kirby kept writing, then Eric Larson took over. So that's the one that I was really excited and didn't know nothing about, because John Byrne did that with the X-Men, where he took off after a certain point. And now Eric Larson did it. And Eric Larson does have in the new previews, he does have a Captain America The End coming out where he writes it and draws it. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I love Eric Larson. He's my favorite Image creator.
I think I agree. I just give him a lot of credit for sticking for, you know, what he wanted to do, and he just kept doing it, you know?
Well, not only did he just keep doing it, it's a little different than McFarlane, because McFarlane just started plotting it really early.
Oh, big time.
Eric draws it and writes it, and he's never handed over the reins in the Savage Dragon proper.
Right.
He's done it with other titles that have Savage Dragon in it, but not his proper title.
Well, even for some of Spawn, didn't McFarlane step back all the way, and there were some issues they didn't do anything with,
No, he's always listed on plot.
Really?
Yeah,
I thought there were some.
No, that's why he got the world's record.
Okay.
He has the Guinness.
I was actually thinking about that when he got the world's record. I'm like, you know what? I thought there's some issues that he's not credited as doing at all.
There are issues that he wasn't the writer, but he has plot credits on everything.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, there you go.
Yep. There you go. And maybe the DC app got updated and Chris can talk about his.
I don't think it needs to update. The weird thing is I can load, if I haven't read it before, I can load up something new and there's no problem. But if I load up something I already read, none of the images load. But if you like look at the preview where you can see a preview of all the pages show up.
Hmm.
But I get Alfred if I actually try to look at any of the pages. So I logged in on my computer and I can look at it that way. It's working fine that way. So
that's strange though. Yeah.
I haven't got Alfred to show up in a long time. So on the iPad, at least, it's been pretty solid.
Yeah.
And I haven't had any issues like watching things. Cause a lot of people I've talked to have had issues with the DC Universe app, but I use it on the iPad and I Chromecast it to the TV. And that seems to work really well.
I don't have issues watching anything. It just, I don't know why, but it does not remember anything of where I've left off on anything at all. Like, I've got all these things that, like, I've watched several episodes, and if I would go to it, it would just start with episode number one for me. It doesn't record or remember what I've left off on for anything.
It only does that for obscure stuff for me. Like, I was watching the Superman Fleshner cartoons, and that one I would have to go find which one I had to watch.
Oh my God,
but, like,
ridiculous.
As far as the main shows, like Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing and stuff, it kept track for me.
Mm. But you know how I was watching the Aquaman cartoon?
Yeah.
Well, like the Super Aquaman Friends and stuff. It doesn't remember anything.
I think it's the older stuff that you have to worry about. The newer stuff, you don't.
I think it remembered the Titans.
Yeah, it's probably because you're watching stuff from the 70s. And I think it did the same thing with the. I started watching the Shazam and the Winnebago ones again. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd drive around and solve like teenagers' crimes. It's so ridiculous. He's the most powerful mortal, and he's driving around in a Winnebago and helping a blind kid. I don't know. It's weird. It's so weird. He's helping a blind kid find a doctor for his sick brother who got bit by a rattlesnake. or there's this peer pressure episode where these guys are peer pressuring him to stealing a car, like some kid to steal a car, and Shazam saves the day so he doesn't have to be peer pressured and the other kids go to jail. I just love it.
Oh, it's a good thing. I guess there's not a lot of crime going on, so. Yeah, nothing, he takes what he can get.
No world crises. It's just,
nope.
Hey, we're teaching the kids a moral this episode.
That's right.
Have you seen it before?
I just watched one episode, because I remember the one that you were talking about with the
blind kid?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they show the gods, it's all animated. It's weird. Like when he's talking to the gods about something, because he'll consult Solomon, and Solomon's animated.
Yep.
I just love shit like this.
Oh, it's funny. So, Chris, what do you got for us?
So, this will continue. This will go with the theme Mike established. I'll talk about New Teen Titans. Issue 33. This is from the Baxter run. And this is Eric Larson.
Really?
Mike, you probably still need this issue.
No.
DC,
I'm pretty like well-rounded from like 73 forward. Unless it's like House of Mystery or something weird, I don't have it.
Yeah.
But if it's like mainstream superheroes, I have it, but I didn't know that he did a Teen Titans, so I'll have to revisit
weird.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little thing that they sometimes call a joke. but this is called The City Came Tumbling Down. And this is a little time period where Paul Levitz was the guest writer. Marv Wolfman was taking a little break, probably working on other stuff. Do have inks by Romeo Tangao, so kind of giving it some consistency. And it's, I think you would find it interesting to look at, Mike, because it is earlier work, of course, and you can see the Eric Larson style in spots, but it's only in spots. And whether how much of that was the inking over top of it, or how much of that was him establishing his style, how much of that was him just trying to fit in with the house style kind of established. It's hard to say, but on the first page you have Beast Boy calling in on a monitor, and his face is real big on the monitor. Whereas in the foreground you have Starfire, Raven, Jericho, and Cyborg in their full body. So you can see Eric Larson's style kind of in Beast Boy's face, but that's kind of the only place that it sort of stands out. But yeah, he's just calling in with an update on what is going on with him. I think at this time he's continuing to kind of investigate stuff with his background with the Doom Patrol and that kind of thing. It just gives a kind of a little bit of an intro for the issue, because it's kind of with it being Levitz, it's sort of a sort of a inner, like a sort of a intermediary period for the book. Interim, I think, is what I was the word I was looking for, actually. With some smaller storylines and things like that. So they discuss a little bit about what Beast Boy is up to after the call. And Cyborg in particular is having a little bit of a trouble just letting Beast Boy do his thing, and Raven reassures him that if he'll definitely call if he really needs them. But as this is going on, all of a sudden Raven seems to sense something wrong somewhere else, and she says the bridge before she disappears in a puff of smoke. And they put two and two together, look out the window, and the nearby bridge, there's an explosion of some sort in the middle of the nearby bridge outside Titan's Tower. So they, the group of them, all spring into action to try to help with the disaster. Starfire lets go of Jericho, and he dives into the water so that he can use his power to rescue somebody that's trapped in a car. He takes possession of them and uses his superior athleticism and calm to so that person knows what to do to free themselves, basically, from the wreckage of a car in the water. While the rest of the Titans use their power to try to contain the damage and save other lives and that kind of thing. Meanwhile, Raven's kind of prior to this, there was another Brother Blood storyline, and her powers have kind of, it wasn't a good experience for her, of course, but as a result of that storyline, her powers are a little more proactive. She's more able to affect people's emotions, and kind of like she's kind of like a good psycho pirate in that way. So once they get all this together with the bridge situation, it skips ahead maybe to the next day or something like that, and Raven and Starfire are in regular clothes. It's daytime. They're walking down the street in somewhere in New York, and Starfire's getting the usual catcalls from her appearance and stuff.
Pigs.
Yeah. It's funny that the way that it almost looks kind of the way that Larson draws the guy that whistles at her. He's got suspenders on and a long white t-shirt, so it almost looks like old-timey a little bit, like they're in a earlier version of New York, but
I can't even find the Baxter series on the app. That's so weird.
I searched for New Teen Titans, went to the different series, and then it's kind of weird. The 1981 shows up, the first series, towards the top, but the 1984 Baxter run is a bit farther down.
Okay. I'm looking for it, but I can't. It doesn't show up on mine at all. It's weird.
It's weird. So the two of them are having a conversation essentially about their different natures, how, you know, what comes really easy to Starfire and how she shows her emotions and stuff, and how Raven has to sort of fears doing that, and also has to be careful because of her father. But what they're on their way to is a place where a realtor kind of place, basically, to look at apartment listings. As Starfire says to her as they walk in, you don't have to rent an apartment for you and your mother today, but you promised you'd at least look at one. So Starfire is helping Raven to kind of try to step out of her shell, basically. And then we've got some more stuff with Cyborg and working on issues with his body at Star Labs. Just the woman Sarah that he sort of been involved with in the past and that works there, she's helping him with his cybernetics and stuff, and there's a little bit of tension between them. Nothing real major. And then kind of the last section of the issue deals with, connects back to the Brother Bud bit a bit. There's, I think it's supposed to be Yankee Stadium. They don't call it out to that, but it deals with Zandia, that nation. And there's a group of terrorists that are trying to get attention for Zandia. It's funny, there's a guy planting dynamite, and he has those, he looks kind of like futuristic, because he's got those real, in an 80s sort of way, because he's got those super duper thin glasses, sunglasses on. The Titans get involved in this again, and Nightwing shows up for the first time in the issue, and same with Donna Troy. So the team together start working to foil this terrorist plot. There's a close-up of Cyborg. I think maybe it's the close-ups of the faces that you can kind of see Larson's style the most. There's one of face Cyborg. You really see it.
This is fascinating, because the only time I see Larson is like on the page in the park. Like if you go to the one where there's no Titans and it's just the people in the park sitting on that cloth and the guy getting slapped, that's where I see Larson. The other stuff doesn't look like Larson to me. The guy with the glasses does, you know, those skinny glasses you were talking about?
Yeah.
But like the Titans themselves, I mean, the only time I could sort of see it is like you said, that when they show Cyborg's face right there. But it's very unusual.
Yeah, and
it's like he's channeling. 14. It's like he's masking his own style to be more like the House style. It's very different. The only time I can see it is like on page 18 when he's drawing like non Titans. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see it on 19 too.
The terrorists and stuff.
Yeah.
You see it on the big splash page?
On page 19, yeah.
19, where it's the dam is breaking, and not so much in the Titans, but there's a big word. The word sploosh is written stylistically.
Yeah.
23
is another one, but every page where he's drawing, it is, and it's not, it's like a Titan. I'm having a hard time seeing it.
Yeah, the 23, there's basically the last terrorist is, she's driving to a...
That is so Eric Larson right there.
Yeah, her face. Yeah. Very much. She's driving to a nuclear plant.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is fascinating to me, because it's almost like he's, it's so different. Cyborg is like the closest, and there's some Raven facial expressions, but the other characters I can't really tell, especially Nightwing. It's hard to tell when he's drawing Nightwing that it's him.
Yeah. Yeah, especially anytime that's like half a body or more of one of the Titans. Really anytime other than a couple, that Cyborg close-up shot and Beast Boy close-up in the beginning. It doesn't really. But it is interesting because you can also, because McFarlane started it, had DC work around the same time in Infinity Inc. A little earlier than this, and in the same way, it only occasionally looks like his style at Marvel.
Yeah, it's harder to tell, but it is, like, you could tell, like, when he did the Batman covers that it was McFarlane, or mm-hmm. like when he did Invasion, because McFarlane did Invasion too, you could tell it's him. But like, if you were to compare this with like that Doom Patrol where Paul Kupferberg was writing and Eric Larson was before the Morrison stuff started, that looks like Eric Larson. So
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
you can definitely tell that's Eric Larson. This actually is, to me, is like fascinating. How did you know I was going to be talking to Eric Larson? That's crazy.
I don't know if I want to reveal my methods because
you have a camera in here.
only in certain parts of your house.
Yeah, because you've been in here. You planted it, didn't you?
It's possible. Yeah, it's actually possible.
Yikes.
So, but yeah, I mean, it pretty much amounts to the Titans deal with the terrorists, the Xandian terrorists, in the latter part of the issue, and then the next issue is Marv Wolfman's coming back. So there were a few episodes or issues in a row like this of Paul Levitz, and obviously he's a very talented writer himself, and so they don't feel out of place, but it's clear that he probably wasn't meant to do anything significant, just kind of tell some stories that don't change too much in the meantime until Wolfman comes back, because he definitely still had a strong hold on the title.
Right.
So, yeah.
I do have this search capability is really bothering me. What did you search for when you pulled this up originally? I tried New Teen Titans. Should I just search for Teen Titans or what?
No, I searched New Teen Titans.
That's weird, because like I go to New Teen Titans, I go to comics, I get New Teen Titans 1980, Tales of the Teen Titans, Convergence New Teen Titans, Teen Titans 2003, Teen Titans Spotlight, Teen Titans 1996. What is that? Teen Titans 2014, Teen Titans Year One, Teen Titans 2016, Teen yep. Titans 1966, Teen Titans Go 2013, Teen Titans 2011, Teen Titans Go 2004. Oh, there it is, finally.
Yeah,
holy crap, it's right before Green Team.
Yeah. I told you, it's like the very last thing that's...
Oh man,
really,
that's
really
why I could, that's why I couldn't find it. I was like,
you weren't going down far enough. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the same spot that it's in mine. But yeah, I mean, because after Green Team, it's like Nightwing, Future's End,
yeah.
New Challengers. I mean, so it's really weird that it's, because you're literally, it should really be like the third or fourth search result, because everything else that has new in the title as the first three results.
Yeah.
The 1980 series, the Tales miniseries, and then the Convergence series, and then it goes to stuff that's just Teen Titans, so I can see why didn't it
this could be the first Eric Larson this actually got me real excited, because it's the first Eric Larson book that I've actually looked at that I would have been, if I didn't look at the credits, I wouldn't have noticed his work, because the only time I notice it, like, is the terrorists, when he draws the terrorists. But like when he's drawing the Titans, I cannot, maybe a couple of cyborg panels, but it's like he's doing a house style. It's crazy. I didn't know he could do one because like I've read a lot of Eric Larson and I can usually tell his stuff, and this is nuts. Thanks for picking that. That was fun to look through.
You did a good job, Chris.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Now I gotta go search for that camera.
Oh my God.
Well, Chuck, check the bathroom first.
Check the bathroom first.
What makes you think there's only one?
Yeah.
He's got backups for backups.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm going to have to do an EM pulse in this house.
Just needs to be done.
That was a great pick. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, if you like that one, wait until you hear this one. I'm just kidding.
Is it Eric Larson?
He wasn't born yet.
Okay.
So my last one that I have is Atomic Rabbit number 6 by Charlton Comics. And I mean, honestly, there's not much to go into this. These are all like just silly talking animal short stories. So it's kind of like, honestly, I was reading it last night and I just didn't have time to pick something else. But I mean, it was fun. It's just there's not a whole lot.
Are they like comic strips or is it like a real story?
Well, I mean, they're real stories, but there's, you know, this is from the 50s.
But a lot of the funny books back then, they would be like 4-page stories, and then you start another 4-page story.
That's exactly what it is. 4 or 6-page stories. Then maybe you have a short 1-page story, and then you have another 6-page story. So I was unfamiliar with Atomic Rabbit, and I was just looking up all different types of Charlton publications on my comic shop a while back, and so I decided to pick up a few. And like the first one is a short 4 or 6-page story where he's just saying that, you know, he'll never say no for people who need help, and that he's exhausted after a long day and his poor old arm is tired. And it just goes into what he did all day and how he needed to use his arm as a drill because they needed to do a tunnel through a mountain for a railroad track instead of going all the way around. So he used his arm as a drill and he dug a tunnel all the way through. And then they knew that there was somewhere else. They knew that there was oil 700 feet down, but the ground was too hard. So he used his arm as a drill to strike oil. And then there were, a plane was falling out of the sky because a propeller stopped spinning. So he used his arm as a propeller and landed the plane safely. And then just when he thought he was going to get rest for the day, his neighbor disturbed him in his hammock and her washing machine broke down. And so there he goes, using his arm as the washing machine. So that was the end of that story. And there's a bunch of just shorter ones. And then lastly, or not lastly, but then the next longer one is he is just going about his business, and there's another character called Sly Fox. And Sly Fox wants to actually trap Atomic Rabbit. So what he does is he flies a rocket ship to the sun. He's got a fireproof rocket ship because it's made with asbestos, of course. Keeps him cool as a cucumber on the face of the sun. And he goes underneath the sun's fiery crust because we all know that there's an actual rock in the middle of there. And underneath there's all these little beings that
keep stoking the sun to keep it hot. Well, he says, Sly Fox says, don't worry, you don't have to do that anymore because people have furnaces and they have electricity, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need you guys to keep the sun hot anymore. So they say, yay, we get a vacation. So then he goes back to Earth and he has all these fur coats. So he starts selling fur coats to everyone because now it's getting cold. So he's getting really, really rich. And he tries to sell one to Atomic Rabbit. And Atomic Rabbit says, no, I'm flying to sun to see what's going on. So when the rabbit gets close, he radios the sun stokers. That it's getting to the electricity has failed and ran out of coal, so can you start the fire again? And just as Atomic Rabbit is about to get real close to the sun starts up again, and he gets away just in time. So he was going to be burnt to a crisp. So what he does is, of course, he gets his cloak because he wears a long cape, and he gets it sopping wet from the milk from the Milky Way. And he wraps himself up in that wet cloak and dives through the flames in the sun and talks to these beings and tells them the truth. So then what he ends up doing, he finds out, you know, obviously from Sly Fox what he had done. And Sly Fox is hanging out on an iceberg, but then it starts melting because of the sun, and Atomic Rabbit grabs him and throws him into jail. So all is well again. And there's a couple more stories. Let's see if I can remember another one. Oh, so there's another short one where, let's see if this is one that I remember. Oh, this one wasn't a good one. It doesn't look like there's any more of the long ones. It was just a couple more of the short ones. Like there's one where they're trying to get a little bunny to get his picture taken, but he's too fidgety and he won't sit still for a minute. And then he needs Atomic Rabbit to help. So they're saying, you know, watch the birdie, and he keeps moving around. And so Atomic Rabbit grabs one of his atomic carrots and tells him to watch the carrot, and then he's staying still. It was just a bunch of silly little stories. It was okay to read.
That was the cover, that one.
Yeah, that was the cover. So it was, you know, some light. I read it last night at some light reading, and you know, it is what it is. It was.
Sometimes that's good before bed.
it was actually the perfect time for it because I was reading some current stuff last night, and then I went into the Tales from the Crypt, and I definitely wasn't in the mood for anything that was going to be made me think, you know, have to really pay attention. So
yeah, you don't want to read Grant Morrison's Green Lantern at that time.
No, I would probably only read about 65% of it.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, his stuff is. His series has been okay, but yeah.
I liked the first six because it was kind of like thematic, and then I loved issue 7, which was when they went inside of his ring.
I remember that. Yeah.
I was like, this was groundbreaking. Plus, it had Liam Sharp doing his own colors, and it actually looked better with his own colors than it's ever looked. Mm-hmm. And that was to me like groundbreaking, like Hal Jordan in his ring trying to survive, and that his ring was a female. That was pretty awesome. I really dug that. And then I got into the multiverse, and it just got so big and convoluted. It was sort of confusing and just hopping around all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But
it's a glorious to look at. Like he's really like him drawing aliens is it's amazing.
Yeah. But, you know, Atomic Rabbit's definitely different than a Grant Morrison.
It's harder to understand Atomic Rabbit.
That's right.
I'm glad that we had you here to break it down for us.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, the kid wouldn't sit still from watching a birdie, but he sat and stood still looking at a carrot.
Wait, can you explain that again? Because I'm not sure I got it. And Nick Wetmore might be listening to this.
Okay, so
and
rabbits.
It sounds very acid trippy to me.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. So rabbits like carrots. So when he held out the carrot,
symbolic.
He wouldn't move. He was transfixed. Birdie didn't do anything for him.
Wow, Nick is gonna love that.
Yeah, but that's all I got. That was my last one.
There are people that love The Invisibles, and then there are people that don't.
I've never read it.
It's more on the trippy side.
Yeah, I bet. So who's got something else?
That's it for me.
I'm done.
You're all done. We're all done.
Yeah, and I didn't get called yet.
I know, isn't that great?
I only got another hour and a half to make it.
See, you're going to do it. I'm telling you. You're not going to get called in today.
Yeah, I might have cursed myself, huh? Barb says you fucked yourself just right now.
No, you're going to be fine. don't worry. You know, our episodes don't go nearly as long as you and Bill.
That's true, but me and Bill don't really concentrate. We end up on... unlike just natural conversation, just the craziest shit.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to like cover something without going down 5 or 10 other things before we actually get to the thing that we're covering.
That's right.
But that's crazy, this Eric Larson art. I just can't stop looking at it because I've never seen him do this. Was there an inker? I didn't pay attention.
Romeo Tangel.
Oh, I bet you he's doing it.
I would say that's probably part of it. Could be part of it, definitely.
What do you think, making it more similar?
He's making it, yeah. It's got to be him.
He's the regular. He was the regular inker the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me look up that Doom Patrol real quick, and I'll see if he has an inker. They probably didn't care with Doom Patrol because they were like, it is its own weird thing and we don't have like a house style for it. So Steve Light started and Eric Larson didn't come on till 6. And he was inked by Gary Martin. But you can look at the covers on those Doom Patrol and you know it's Eric Larson. And it's weird, too, because when Eric took over for McFarlane, I was disappointed. It's so weird.
Oh, me too.
Like, when Spider-Man, I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what is happening? And then somewhere around Savage Dragon, I, like, saw something. It's like the light turned on, and I was like, you know what? I like Eric's art better. I don't know why it happened, but it did. And I think it might have been because of frequency. Like, we lost the McFarlane style so early. Even though Capullo, Matt, I mean, he mimicked it.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe even better than McFarlane did himself in some cases. I would argue that he did it better. But,
I think a lot has to do with just getting older and experiencing a lot of different styles and getting to appreciate things more. I was talking to my LCS owner too, and that New Mutants War Children had come out recently, and I was sharing with him like when Sienkiewicz was doing New Mutants back, you know, I guess in the 80s, I was buying these issues after whoever was doing it before with totally traditional art style. And then he started doing it.
Yeah, it was
like,
Bob.
Who is this guy?
You it was Bob McCloud. Yeah.
Huh?
Bob McCloud.
Right. And I'm like, this guy can't draw to save his life. Like, why are they putting him on this? But again, I was like 13 years old.
You know what I mean?
I was a little older than you, but I looked at Sienkiewicz's art and I was like, what the fuck is this? I'll be honest
this
with you.
Terrible.
I like, he just draws a bunch of straight lines and connects them. Like,
I'm like, I could draw this.
And then when he's drawing like the warlock and then like
yeah.
the bear, you know, the bear story,
yes.
I'm like, what? I think I could do this.
I'm like, I could barely figure out what's going on. Yeah. What is this?
And then he was doing Elektra at the same time, and I'm like, God, I hated it. And now I think it's like masterful. Like it's
absolutely.
So weird. I'm like,
it is.
This is like groundbreaking, and it's so strange. And
yeah,
I felt the same way about
like
Jack Kirby. I didn't like appreciate until like in my college years, and then like I love him now. So it's so
well,
weird.
That's the
and
thing.
I'm more accepting now. It's weird.
Hasn't changed. We've changed.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I picked up a Halloween free comic book manga because I'm always trying to dip my toe in and see how much I don't like it, but I try it. And I read two of them and I liked it so much I bought the manga. So it's like I'm entering a very accepting place in my life. I think it's because I'm closer to death and I just want to experience
like,
everything.
Like you're not that close to death.
Well, I'm closer.
We're all closer than when we started the podcast at 2 hours ago. But still got plenty of years left. But seriously, it's like now I look at his stuff from New Mutants. I'm like, oh my God, this stuff is beautiful. I would love to own like an original art or a commission or something from him in that style because of the style. But
yeah.
At the time, it's like as a kid, you're like, this is not comic book art. This is horrible.
Even when I was looking at the Moon Knight covers, I was like, I don't like these. Like, if you showed me a Steven Platt that was more like McFarlane, I would be like, this is amazing. But then you showed me like a Sienkiewicz cover of Moon Knight, and I was like, I don't like it.
Right.
And now I just love them. Like, I think they're so great.
In our defense, again, you did go from like a McCloud, and it looks like Buscema drew some too. I was just looking it up. Right to Sienkiewicz drawing in this stylized thing from one to the other. And it was like a huge jarring thing, especially, you know, for a younger person. It's like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Yeah. It's weird that they would take a chance on a X-Men book like that. I find it interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah,
even a Scotty Young, like giving Scotty an X-Men book is strange too, because his style
yeah.
is so stylistically different.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah, it was sort of the same, went through a similar thing with, when I was a kid, looking back, my taste was pretty narrow. You know, I didn't really, I liked the Image creators. I don't think I liked Larson as much as McFarlane at first, but I wasn't upset with it. I liked Larson a lot. So it was similar enough that it was still really in my wheelhouse. And I liked Jim Lee, and my tastes have definitely changed a lot, but also broadened.
Yes.
I did have a problem though when Larson left, and I think it was Mark Bagley after that. I was like, what is this garbage?
I like Mark Bagley.
So did I.
I do now. I appreciate
I
him now,
actually thought he was similar, though. The only thing that was different from Bagley, like Bagley's similar in pose and layout to Larson to me, but he's got a smoother line.
Yeah.
Like it is just a smoother line.
It's not as angled. There's not
yeah,
as much
yeah.
angles.
Yeah. Larson's very angled, like
yeah.
a very straight line in his face and stuff like that. And but he draws like dynamic panels like Bagley does, and he's fast. And I don't know where I started to really appreciate Bagley, I think, was Ultimate Spider-Man. That's when I like realized that this guy is something, you know.
I think I first noticed him more because I didn't get a lot of that, but Thunderbolts. I liked him on Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
It was weird for me when he jumped to DC, though. Like, it just didn't even look like Bagley anymore to me.
Yeah, I always think of him definitely as a Marvel artist for sure. But it's funny, it's strange how
like Larson, McFarlane, and Liefeld all had pieces at DC before they blew up at Marvel, though.
Yeah. You were saying when McFarlane came off the book and Larson went on, that, you know, you were like, what is this? And disappointed. And I was the same way, but I was also the same way around the same time with X-Men. When it went from Jim Lee to Silvestri, I didn't like that either. I'm like, what is this? I had Jim Lee. Now I've got this guy. And it's like, who would have known that, like, you know, all of those guys would
for
blow
X-Men
up.
It was a little bit different for me because I like Silvestri more.
Oh, did you? No,
yeah,
I never did. But
it's fascinating how styles change.
Yeah.
And I finally got, I think my brain finally triggered on how to read manga. Like I had such a hard time, and now it's not as hard anymore. I really had a hard time, not reading back to forward, but going from right to left.
It is. I've only read one. It was like a free comic book day offering that was actually published manga style.
Well, this one like did it. Its job, because it had one was like the I can't remember, it's something about a classroom or something like that, but it's very much in the vein like where they're at this high school, and it's like The Woods. Did you ever read that from Boom? It's like
just a little bit. I haven't read
isolated from the rest of the world, and people start to freak out, but it's not just kids in this, it's adults as well. And then the other one was creepy because it's about this daughter and brother that lost their family to like these gang members. And then years later, when he's getting executed, he's like haunting them, like he's ringing their doorbell and coming to like haunt them. So it's very much, they're both horror genre. Maybe that's what I needed to poke into, is the horror theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we could wrap this one up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go have lunch.
Yes.
Me too.
All right. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, and at Rob Krieger. Sounds like right. Seeger, but not spelled like Seeger.
But not spelled like that.
And on Facebook, it's Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button, and I think that's about it. Until next
Mike,
time.
We didn't get any questions.
I know. I
People
was
should be ashamed of themselves.
You said it.
Yeah, right? Unbelievable.
Maybe you should ask for them in advance. Like
maybe
week,
next time.
Weeks in advance.
Maybe everyone was sleeping in on their fall back day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks. Have a good rest of your day.
All right. Bye.
Adios.